started here, and if there's no objections here, we'll start with the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Call the State Government Finance meeting to order here on Thursday, February 18th, 2016. Roll call. Did we actually do that?
No.
She'll do it. And I think what we're going to start with is Ms. Roberts, you're going to do the kind of the outlay of the capital. Well, and there's cookies and coffee up here if anybody's interested in it, so help yourself.
State Representative from Chanhassen, which is Carver County. I serve on the Veterans and just really awesome to do so. And I represent 9 other cities around Lake Minnetonka. Thank you so much for being here.
All right, with the introductions being completed, take it away.
Mr. Chair, members, and members of the audience, my name is Helen Roberts, and I'm a fiscal analyst for the House, a nonpartisan fiscal analyst, and I have staffed the State Government Committee since chair of this committee asked me to put together just a very brief overview of the state funding for veterans. And that's what this, both of these charts are really the same information, with the second chart having just a little bit more of a breakdown. But the purpose is really to show the trend in funding has been to a general trend of increasing funding for veterans. So the chart represents the state's general fund appropriations to the Department of Veterans Affairs. The department is funded through these general fund dollars, as well as federal funds that go for the veterans' homes, both for operations and for the construction and repair and maintenance of the veterans' homes. Federal funds come in the form of patient per diems that go to the home, and then also funds for construction projects that are matched with state funding dollars. The department is split into two areas. The first is programs and services, which provide services to assist veterans and their families in attaining federal and state benefits. This area includes things like the State Soldiers Assistance Program, the higher education benefits, the County Veteran Service Office's grant program is in programs and services, and also included in this is funding for state cemetery operations. The second area that's funded is the Veterans Healthcare Program, which funds the 5 state veterans' homes, and this is the largest part of the state's funding. And as you can see, if you look at the chart, the state appropriations for the department have grown over the last 14 years, with most recently an 8.5% increase in the 2013 session, and then in this last legislative session, there was a 13.2% increase over the last biennial. One thing that Representative Anderson wanted me to know, and she's not here right now, but although if you look at it, it looks like there might be a funding reduction in the fiscal year 2012-13 biennium. This is really just due to some unique one-time funding decisions that were made by earlier legislatures. So if you're interested, the second chart provides some detail on those items. You can see, for example, there was honor guard funding that was done on a one-time basis. And some things like that, but actually let you know that subsequent legislatures have made several of those items now ongoing. So it's just a reflection of sort of the idiosyncrasy of the way that the legislature budgets, but in fact, the 2011 legislature actually approved a 2.5% increase over the base. So she just wanted me to sort of give some a little, let you know there's some additional detail on that. In the last 4 years, there have been increases to both the services area and the veterans' home. For example, in the 2013 session, changes included the permanent funding I mentioned for both the county veterans service officers grants and the honor guards. And in this last budget session in 2015, the legislature appropriated a $16.9 million increase for the veterans' homes. And this is the department had come to the legislature and the governor requesting this funding to cover increased operating costs and increased compensation costs at the homes.
Are there any? I don't know if many people have questions on this portion now. If there are any questions, or just go ahead.
I have a question.
Mr. Chair, we got a question.
Yes. I have two questions, and I don't know where you want this in this program, but how much of the funding you just mentioned is administrative? And when it comes to the honor guard funding, I understand that was being cut. It's a big, big part of rural communities, honor guards are, and I'm sure in the cities too. I know my father was in the cities, he was an honor guard. But this is pretty critical to the flavor of our community, having honor guards participate in the funeral of a veteran.
Correct. Mr. Roberts, can you help us with
it? Mr. Chair and audience, the state funding for the honor guard program has not been cut. It was maintained at the same level as in previous years in the last approved budget. But I'm not certain of if there could be a federal component that may be in play here. And I don't know that answer offhand, but I can find out.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The state funding has not been cut for the honor guard. The problem that we're having in certain counties is finding the veteran post, the DFW post to perform the duty. That's been a problem for across Minnesota. that's, we're trying to look at ways that we can, maybe there's some ROTC people or ROTC people that can fill in the gap. So the problem is, I see a problem in Minnesota where I belong to the VFW American Legion at Forest Lake, is drawing the younger veterans back into our fold. Get those younger veterans involved in the post, whether it's VFW or American Legion. There's a lot of young veterans that are coming back into our state. That's one issue that I think we should really address at the state level or at the post level too.
And the other part of your question was?
Was how much of the funding that is supplied by the state is actually used for administration? How much actually goes to the vets? I know you mentioned a families and per diem type.
Mr. Chair, so for example, I'm looking at the funding spreadsheet from the last session. For the programs and services area, the total funding from the state is about $16.4 million per year. And of that, about just about $2.5 million is what we consider is labeled as administration.
Does that include hospitals, vets, hospitals, doctors? Are they paid through the federal government?
No, it does not. That's the VA hospitals are in federal
government. Yeah. Keep that in mind. When we're talking veterans homes here, it's the state veterans homes, not the federal VA.
And Mr. Chip, so that first number was just for the programs and services area, so that's the non-healthcare area of the department. For Veterans Healthcare, the five homes, the total funding, for example, in fiscal year 2016, the general fund amount was $52.7 million in appropriation. And of that amount, we've identified $6 million is for administration of all the homes.
Any other questions on the budget piece of this? If not, we'll have Representative Detmer go down the DA legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then for everybody here?
Yes.
Some of us have tinnitus. But anyway, I'll try to speak up. I think that we've been able to accomplish some good things this past session, the past couple sessions for veterans. Again, I chair the Veterans Committee. Also, in the audience here, we have Ben Wiener, the CBSO for Pine County. Ben, would you stand up? Everybody know Ben? Thank you, Ben, for coming. The CBSOs for the counties, there's 87 counties. Some counties have three, some have four, some have five, some have one, whatever. It depends on the population of your veterans in your town. They play a big role in helping the veterans, men and women, get their benefits. You know, in my office, at the Capitol, we get calls all the time about issues, the veterans' issues. Now, my first question usually is, have you called, have you talked to, have you met with your CBSO? And many times it's not. Well, I'll do, I'll pull up my directory. This is the person. This is the person we need to call. They play a big role in helping our veterans. Also with us today is Mr. Ben Johnson from the department. Ben, would you stand up? Ben is from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He's been following us and been able to answer some questions that we don't have answers to. And thank you, Ben. He's the legislative liaison person that comes into the Capitol and sits in on our hearings, our committee hearings, and is always there to answer questions and so forth. So, and he's also a veteran, and thank you for coming. One thing that we are able to accomplish this year, there are several things, is the veteran-owned service small businesses. How many here own businesses and have businesses, okay? And if you want to become a veterans-owned small business, you have to get certified. And in the past, you had to be certified through the federal VA. And many times, there's a lot of hoops you had to jump through, a lot of a lot of paperwork and so forth that would take months, and you'd have to send, your application back, you'd send it back. And what we're able to do now is that you can get certified right here in the state of Minnesota. You go to the Department of Veterans Affairs, to DD-214, showing that you are a veteran. And then you go to the Department of Administration. The Department of Administration does the action certification. And they will look at your record, and that you have a form that you fill out. You can actually do it online and fill it out and get certified within a couple of weeks as a veteran's own small business. Well, what does that do for you? Well, if you are doing a bid on a state contract, it could be for paper and pencils or roller or construction or whatever it is, you can get up to 6% preference on when you do your bid. So that would help out our veterans that are currently own businesses or those that are coming back, would like to start businesses, and help them get their feet on the ground and some of these contracts. I also met with the counties at their convention up in St. Cloud. I spoke to them, and counties are taking a look at that too. If they're going to need to hire people, hire businesses to do some work for a county, they can also get a preference. I know Chisago County has already got a policy, and hopefully other counties will follow suit. So that's a big thing that we've been working on for several years. And also expanding the program to train local police officers, whether it's fire or police or rescue EMTs, paramedics, and so forth. We have a training program that we funded, and now cities, counties are asking for this training and for de-escalation techniques. There's many times veterans that are having problems with law enforcement and so forth, they're in a situation, well, how should a police officer or EMT, paramedic, how should they react to maybe a veteran that's been in a battlefield and now they're having some problems, whether it's PTSD or whatever. And so this training really helps those people, professionals, in working with veterans. Easing the red tape for utilizing the GI benefits. Some of the active duty soldiers that have come off active duty are faced with the hassles and delays of getting their benefits. And right now, let's say if you're coming off active duty and you join the net, let's say if you're coming off active duty, come to Minnesota, you always have to wait 12 months. You have to be a resident of Minnesota for 12 months before you get some of these benefits, whether it's college benefits, loan payment programs. Now, if you are active drilling with the National Guard or the Air National Guard or the Army Reserve, if you're drilling, you can start those benefits right away. You don't have to wait 12 months. So we passed that legislation. A big one that we've been working on, I know I've been working on for about 10 years, and there's been legislators working on it prior to that. We're one of only six states that still tax our veterans' pension, our veterans' retirement pay. And we have the phase-out of that in the tax bill. And hopefully we can get that tax bill through, get it through the Senate, through the House. I think Governor Dayton will sign it. He might not veto that part of the tax bill. I really think it's something that the Minnesota needs to start doing now. I know I had a brief comment, discussion with Governor Walker in Wisconsin when we did the groundbreaking ceremony for the bridge down in Stillwater. And I came up to him, introduced myself. I said, well, this is about some of the things we're trying to do for veterans in Minnesota. He looked at me and said, we got rid of that tax years ago. Plus in Wisconsin, if you're a veteran, you get free tuition to the colleges. Then he said, well, we're trying to do in Wisconsin, kind of tongue-in-cheek though. He said, well, we would like to get rid of income tax. Well, there's nine states that don't have income tax, and he had a smile on his face, and I looked over where the bridge is going up. I said, Governor Walker, if you get rid of income tax in Wisconsin, that bridge is going to be awful busy going from west to east. So I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. But I know a lot of veterans that live in Wisconsin or in Iowa got rid of that tax, South Dakota, of course. that live in Wisconsin that has come across the river and have jobs or have companies in Minnesota. So that's something that we've been working on. There's several other bills I could go through that we passed. I think in terms of Chapter 7, the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill, that passed in the final vote. There was the funding of the CBSOs, you know, the funding, the training comes, if you didn't know this, the training for the CBSOs comes from the department, but they are hired by the county. They have an office in the county. And also there's extra funds that go out to the counties for special projects. And maybe the department could speak to that, that those funds that get out to the counties.
Oh, sure. So again, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. So thanks for having us again. This is a great turnout. I appreciate their invitation to continue to come out with them to meet you. The County Veteran Service Officers are in every county. We've got 87 counties in the state. There are 93 offices. County Veteran Service Officers are depending on veterans population. A county like Hennepin County, which has 65,000 veterans, has 13 County Veteran Service Officers. Milk County, where we were at earlier in the week, they have approximately 23,000 veterans, so they've got an office that has 5 County Veteran Service Officers. Their county employees and the state of Minnesota, through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, provides additional funding. There's sort of a baseline grant that goes to each county to assist with the County Veteran Service Officers, and then there's additional money allocated based on population of veterans in the county. So that's sort of how the funding runs through us, trying to partner as much as we possibly can with County Veteran Service Officers, because the state in St. Paul can only do so much, and if we don't have boots on the ground in the community, we miss a lot of opportunities to help provide veterans and their families with benefits, with programs and services. So it's a great collaboration, and we really appreciate working with the County Veteran Service Organizations. But the only other thing that I would give a plug to is something we're working on, the SOT grants, support our troop license plates that you can purchase for your vehicles. That money goes into a fund that is distributed between Military Affairs and Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have grants available to groups that are doing programs and projects for veterans. Grants are actually, we're receiving applications for grants now through the 22nd of February is our first go-round with that. That's another thing that the legislature helped us with last year, was approving the distribution of those funds to more than the limited number of groups that we had been previously approved to give it to. So if you have an organization that helps veterans and you'd like to apply for additional funding in the form of a grant, the SOT grant fund through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is available.
Thank you, Chris. And, Mr. Chair, I'll just kind of finish up here, then we probably will open up the questions. And you know, there's 369,000 veterans that live in Minnesota. And as I mentioned, that the bill that's in the tax bill, there's only 19,000 veterans that live in Minnesota that are drawing retirement, whether it's at 20 years or more, or medically retired. And there's also, could be a group that back, I think during the Clinton administration, there was an early out for some veterans of 18 years, they would also. And this bill is just, it would be phasing out that tax. It's not a total get rid of, you know, if you take a look at all the different ranks that we have in the military, you're a four-star general. We only have one four-star general that is retired in Minnesota. It's General Bassey. What the bill does is treats all veterans the same. So when you sit down and do your taxes, if you're a retired veteran, you're drawing a pension, when you sit down and do your taxes, you get $1,000 off per year of service up to 20 years. So if you've got, if you're one of those medically retired, you've got 15 years in, you deduct $15,000 from off your income. If you've got 20 years in, it'd be $20,000. And it all rates the same, whether you're 5 retired or a 4-star again, it treats everybody the same.
Does that affect now or?
No, it's in the tax bill.
Okay, so taxes are new, you know.
We won't get to the tax bill until March 8th, so hopefully.
Is that only for retired vets or that's for retired lifetime?
Yeah, retired. Whether it's medically retired or 20 years or more.
And that would apply, if I can interject, it would apply to active duty National Guard or Reserve. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do an argument for that. I just talked to a friend of mine who was in his 80s, and he's full-time military retired. And he was saying that his son-in-law is also retired, and he was living in Wisconsin, but he was hesitant to move to Minnesota because of this factor. So for and I've heard this from other people too, it was this deterrence to moving to Minnesota. I'm wondering how many veterans who come to Minnesota to have their income spread out through the communities would it take to offset the cost of the tax? Wow. That'd be a good formula, a good argument to present.
Yeah, it is.
We've got some good data that shows the difference between Wisconsin before they eliminated it and afterwards, and I think, Bob, you've got the numbers.
Several million dollars, and I don't have the numbers in my head, but we have a... When we testify in our committees, we got all that information there.
There's millions of dollars of difference between what Wisconsin receives and what Minnesota receives from that federal retirement of the military. So it's huge.
And it's all federal, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
It's all federal money coming into the state. There's the TRICARE, the health care that you also have, TRICARE for life, and also your retirement money that you are taking in, that you're going to buy a home. Let's say most people are in their 40s when they retire, if they went in right after high school, they're going to get other second jobs, second careers. Now they're the GI Bill, now their spouse and their kids can use it to go to college. All this money comes into the state, and their skill sets. After 20 years, you probably learn some things about life and the skills that you learn in the military and also leadership skills that you learn if you come through the ranks in the non-commissioned officer ranks or officers. You learn something. And I have twin sons that are West Point graduates that they're serving now, and they each got 15 years in right now. And first thing I told them though, when they left West Point, so I told them, when you get to your first duty station, find out who your first sergeant is, find out who your two leaders are, because they'll either make you or break you. And they've done a good job.
Well, I think it's a perfect opportunity to let our chair introduce herself and take the gap.
Well, and I apologize for being late. I had another commitment in St. Paul, and that ran a little late, and then I was trying to get here as fast as I can, but I appreciate the turnout here today. Our biggest concern is because veterans issues are part of our committee, we provide the funding for the Veterans Affairs Department. We are interested in getting your input on the services that are provided to you from the state level. But as we have found when we've gone to other communities, we've gotten a lot of feedback on federal issues too, things that are outside of our control. But that shouldn't stop you from mentioning them to us because we do communicate with our congressional delegation. So any feedback that you provide to us, we make sure that our congressional folks that serve in D.C. Hear about it as well. And then also it gives us an opportunity to see what is some kind of coordination that we can have from the state level with the federal level when it comes to those sorts of things. We did ask in the last legislative session that we take a look at the veterans' homes, in particular here in Minnesota, and the management of them and so forth. So we're expecting to receive a report back on that. Probably in mid-April is when we expect to get that data back, and I think that will be helpful for us as we can move forward and look at the budget situation in its entirety. But I don't want you to have to listen to me. I wanted to hear your input, your thoughts, and see if there's any feedback, especially after Representative Detmer's kind of gone through what we've did in the last legislative session. So if there's any questions that you have for us, I encourage you to let us know. I think we have a former senator here, and just wanted to say hi to you and appreciate Representative Ware, too, also for being such a great hostess and for putting this on. So, and we also do have a person from the department that is here too, who has been helpful and following us all around. Ben, you want to give yourself give a shout out to folks? Okay, good. Awesome. So, any questions or feedback from folks at all, or members too, if you have any questions from so far?
I've got a question just as far as the state VA goes. I know from phone calls and even internet searches, sometimes it seems to get confusing between the state and the federal. Does the state always fall under the federal as far as administration, or are there times when there's separate paths on things, or how does that even work?
Madam Chair, sir, yeah, you got your federal VA, your state VA, you got your Federal Department of Veterans Affairs, and you got your Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And there's federal laws and policies that we have to follow. You know, when it comes to what determines a veteran, that's a federal issue. The state also follows those issues. But knowing Commissioner Shelto, he's our commissioner of Veterans Affairs. And also then General Nash is our editor general. They have to pay attention to what's going on at the federal level. And a lot of the funding for the military affairs comes from the federal level. And also our five veterans homes that we have in the state of Minnesota, some of that is federal, some of the state. So yeah, we're kind of combined. But I think the two agencies, the military affairs and Department of Veterans Affairs, they do a great job.
I know, especially with the internet, it seems like it gets confusing. You try and kind of find an answer, follow an issue, and you kind of get bounced between federal and state oftentimes, and it's hard to tell which direction to go.
Madam Chair, I think that an excellent resource for you to do when you start hitting those roadblocks is get a hold of your CVSO. They can guide you and tell you which benefit is a state benefit, which is a federal benefit, and possibly which is the best way to apply for those benefits and the avenue to go, because there are state and federal benefits. And sometimes trying to navigate when you're talking websites, they're pretty difficult. I would say pick up the phone and call your CVSO like Ben back there, and he'll guide you through that process. And they're an excellent resource. I use mine all the time. So.
Yeah, and the website, the department, the Department of Veterans Affairs has an excellent website. I find it fairly easy to navigate. I'm not that savvy, but there's some good information there. And you can always call the numbers there. And in fact, Commissioner Shelto is one of the few commissioners that I know that actually answers his own poll. And you can actually get a real person on the phone. If he's in his office, he's usually answering the phone. Your CVSO is the best first stop.
Mr. Johnson, anything to add to that at all, or in the coordination between the federal and the state?
Chair? Not really. I think that they've pretty much nailed it. I think the refrain is talk to your CVSOs first. It's a great first step in figuring out which direction you want to go. Sometimes there are challenges navigating the internet in terms of distinction between the two, and there's a lot of websites out there that look like a federal or state VA website that aren't affiliated with either. So it can be challenging, but I think the answer that Representative Detmer gave about Commissioner Shelto holds true for the whole agency. We try and be as responsive as possible. So if you get online and see something goofy, or you have a question about benefits at the state or local level, federal level, the link vet, the 1-800 link vet number is staffed by individuals. We've got a contract with the state of Minnesota that allows us to have that phone system answered and direct people to the right answers as quickly as possible. But I I'll echo that the CBSO is a great first step, first resource, because they have real in-depth knowledge of sort of which track you need to be pursuing, or multiple tracks to pursue.
I just want to call to Representative
Rockford
being here,
too.
Former representative for this area.
Thank you.
So, any other comments at all from folks?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm Rick Olsen. I work for Congressman Nolan. I'm the 8th District, or his field rep in the southern part of the district here. And your metro legislators might not hear this so much, but you guys pretty much all are eligible for Veterans Choice. And it's been just a nightmare. I worked quite a bit with Ben Wiener on some residents that are, the paperwork is horrible, and they're questioning, they talk to somebody, and this is a federal issue, so just so you, I just want to.
I didn't realize that you worked for Nolan's office, otherwise I
would have said that. Oh, that's fine. I wouldn't let that slip. But, you know, these cases, they'll be on the line for hours to get an appointment or an authorization number through Veterans Choice. And then the phone breaks or something, and the next person, they got to start all over again, and they say, oh, you're not eligible. And so this has been horrible. And then people that do get authorization numbers, they get the service. And I have veterans that haven't been paid, or the clinic hasn't been paid for over a year. So this thing that, can I just take a minute and say why it started? Is that okay with you? Okay. Well, in case you're not aware, Veterans Choice was formed by Congress after in Arizona there was found that they were double booking veterans and people were dying literally waiting for their appointments. And so they set up this program that if you lived more than 40 miles from a VA or 30 days out from an appointment, you could see your own doctor. And that's not how it played out. There's a third-party administrator called the HealthNet Network that administers the program. And they just are not geared up for administering this big of a program. And it's the people who are suffering are the veterans that it's designed to help. So if you guys are having problems, you know, work through Ben Wiener, and we work together on a lot of these cases. But I just wanted to let you guys know how, in Pine County in particular, they're 80 miles from Superior, from St. Cloud, from the Minneapolis VA. So just about everybody here is eligible for Veterans Choice, but they're having just a horrible time getting the services, getting appointments, getting the bills paid. They're getting collection notices when they should never even be getting those collection notices. So, thank you for your time.
The last meeting, too, we got some feedback on some of
the healthcare. The problem with that is I'm eligible. And if you read the document, it takes, if you want it to use that, you need to notify this outfit. And it takes them 2 to 3 days before you get an appointment. If I'm laying in bed sick and stuff, I don't need 3 or 4 days of throwing up, you know, or whatever. So, you know, that's one of the downfalls, and that's why people won't use it that much. It takes too long to get in here.
We had feedback from a fellow from southern Minnesota. He had a situation where he had some wood chips in his eye and really couldn't see, and they expected him to drive all the way to the Twin Cities to get doctor care. He says, listen, I can't get in the car and drive safely. And it took him a couple of rounds to finally get them to clear him to go to a local clinic. And, you know, I think as feedback from us, I mean, that was one of the big issues, is especially when you're in greater Minnesota, we don't have as much access to these care facilities. It'd be much easier to go to a local facility. So, I mean, that was one of the takeaways that we got from that experience. So, any other thoughts at all or experiences that you've
That was actually my biggest question coming here was the choice. Is there a site that is being updated to what's going on and qualifications and whatnot? Or, I
mean, it's a nightmare.
I see like news articles that are usually after the fact and then goes one way and then something changes. But, I mean, is there any kind of current status?
No, I was looking back there Ben Wiener,
I can echo what everyone else is saying. It's pretty hit or miss. Sometimes it works, a lot of times it doesn't. It's kind of a paperwork nightmare, but I have had some luck in helping veterans navigate it, and also Congressman Owens' office has a lot of help, a lot of luck helping. But it can be difficult, and it's not designed for emergency care. It's not designed for new disabilities or things like that. It's kind of designed for kind of conditions that you've already been seen for, and then to not have to go all the way to the VA to be seen for those conditions.
So, help me, Deb. So the idea is to be proactive and set that up long before you're actually, and it's for stuff you've already been seen for, it's already hooked up, so the idea is to make that connection ahead of time.
Right, and you have to stay on top of them because they'll say they'll call back and they usually don't.
So is you it actually trying to, going back to replace a health care, or is this just some kind of a subsidiary thing or something?
I see it as it was designed to be kind of a subsidiary thing, so if you're delayed and getting into the VA and you can't get your appointment within the time allotted that you should be seen, then you can go through this method and get seen by a local provider.
Did you want to comment on that?
If you don't mind. So I'm the Veterans Benefit Representative for FCI Sandstone, and a few of the issues that I heard with Veterans Choice today while I was at work was when a friend of ours went down to the VA to be seen. He said they told him to come back, call this Veterans Choice. They'll give you a call back within 2 days for your next appointment, and it's been 2 months. He never received the call back to make that next appointment to be seen locally. That's a big issue.
So we see tax dollars.
Is there a great appeal here? Great appeal? I had a letter from Mr. Thiel, and he said he was not coming in. I told him we were going to be here. He had some issues too, so I just wanted to know if he was here.
Okay, well, that's good feedback.
Tom
Stein should know that as well. We'll share. I'll share it with
my Congressman.
I have
Eric Congressman. Well, Madam
Chair. Yes.
I heard over the over the past week here that Congress decided to pass the a piece of the budget that actually eliminates a program that I took advantage of. When I deployed, I already had my degree. I didn't see a need to use the GI Bill for myself, but to entice us senior members of the military to stay in time of war when they wanted us, they started this program that we could take our GI Bill and give it to our family members. Mm-hmm. And it would pay them their housing stipend, and it would pay them for just as they would have been a veteran. Well, that was one of the reasons some of us signed up and extended, because that was a great benefit that we could take that and provide for education for our family members. Well, now I hear that they're slicing some of those benefits, and I'm sitting there going, here's something that we, and my benefit has already been used up. My daughter cleaned house on that thing, but that's a, actually my daughter's the only, one of my four kids that did not go in the military. The rest of the other three are all in. But the idea is here's a benefit they guaranteed us, we signed up for, we extended for, and now Congress is voting to cut it. And it's just one of those things on the federal level that you scratch your head and go, really? I mean, here's something that you enticed us to sign up for when you needed us, and now that you don't need us anymore and you're reducing the military, you're just looking to eliminate it to give you a sour taste.
What's new?
Well, I was going to ask Representative Rarick, he serves on the bonding committee, and the bonding committee does tours during the interim. I didn't know if you had a chance to talk veterans issues, or if you guys are saving that for a regular session, because that's a large part of the bonding process too. So.
We've had our first bonding committee will be coming up on March 3rd. We did some tours. There are a couple of things in the bill that are being requested for veterans. I know from talking with other members, infrastructure and things of that nature and veterans issues are going to be top priorities. We've got $800 million to $1 billion for bonding that we might do, and there's already over $5 billion in requests. So we're not going to be able to get nearly everything
saw that as a priority, helping our elderly, and I think things that can help older veterans in the bonding bill would definitely be some of the top priorities.
Any other feedback or comments?
Do you plan on building any more veterans' homes?
You know, there are a couple of proposals on the table. I don't know if Representative Eric, you want to comment on that.
I know there is one for Bemidji has one for Brainerd. So Bemidji and Brainerd both have requests for that that are in the bond bill. Chair Davis.
Yeah, there's one potentially in southern Minnesota, and then Montevideo is another one that is proposing that.
I think my kids asked me to ask that, so that, you know, I got a place to go.
And I think Representative Dukin has actually got a proposal to do some a new style of something to fund a wing on an existing nursing home just for veterans and try something a little bit different. And that's kind of the impetus and proposal. When you got staff as such as a top priority and hard to get, that's kind of a unique proposal that I think bears some merit to take a look at.
Well, one of the comments that we had from the last hearing that we had on this issue is meeting the gap for folks that don't qualify for Hastings but don't also qualify for Minneapolis, because there are different needs for their health care. Whereas Hastings is a little less, Minneapolis is much more intensive, and they kind of fall in between. So there are folks that have talked about, you know, providing a facility that kind of needs those needs too. So it's part of the conversation.
Because it'd be sort of nice just to have a home with. Well, I think if you're healthy and stuff, or you can get around by yourself, it makes you more depressed and unhealthy. Be with people that need all this care and all this thing. And you look at that and go, wow, how soon before? But if you're not there, you say, hey, I'm energetic, I'm doing things with the other guys, but everybody else that you're with, if you're in the nursing care part, what can they do with, you know, they can play shuffleboard with you or whatever. So.
And Madam Chair, on March 7th, there's going to be a ribbon-cutting ceremony or a grand opening of Building 21 at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We funded that along with some federal funds, and so that's going to be a grand opening. And we talked about other communities that want a veterans home. The only drawback is that the federal VA allows each state to have so many beds. And right now, we can't add another veterans home until we open up this new wing for this new part of the Minneapolis home. And then they're closing down an older one, and that's going to open up some beds, so we might have enough beds to go with another home, or maybe two. So we're only allowed, 900 some beds?
And isn't that based on the current population of our veterans?
That is too.
But I think it's 1,058.
Yeah. There's a waiting list of veterans wanting to get in. And most veterans want to stay with other veterans. It's just the camaraderie that we have. So that's an issue. There is a bill that we didn't talk about that's in the tax bill, and that's to give veteran service organizations, clubs, a tax break of 30%, basically. It cuts their property taxes in a third for a 10-year period. Trying to get those younger veterans, because it seems like it takes about 10 years for the younger veterans to figure out that they want to go back and associate with the people that employed that. So, you know, that's in the tax bill right now. We don't know if it's going to survive, but basically that gives the folks 10 years to figure out how to get those young veterans in and get the membership back up, and then it sunsets. So that's a proposal that's out there.
Madam Chair, right now it's in statute where if the post donates, whatever they donate in the community, whether it's for high school sports or whatever it is, but equals to your last year's taxes, you get a break on the property tax too. That was put in the law about 8 years ago. And that's run through the county.
Great. Mr. Weiner, go ahead.
I'm the commander of Chapter 4 here in Pine County. I'm with the DAB. I have twofold question. Number one, have you as a committee of the state of Minnesota looked at what happens when National Guard Army Reserve troops are deployed to their families and to their education? You created quite a fiasco when all the troops got called up and these kids got pulled out of college, and it was a serious financial hit for every one of those veterans. Mm-hmm. Are you addressing, or have you ever addressed that issue? That's one. And there's quite a few of you that deployed with those young men. The second one is, in 2005, I was employed at Ogwich Shing, which was a nursing home run by the state of Minnesota under the Department of Human Services. There were 460 geriatric beds in that facility when the state of Minnesota sold it for $1. What happened to those beds? You're looking for beds for a veterans home. Have you ever asked the Department of Human Services what happened to those beds? Those are my two questions.
On the issue of National Guard deployments, has the subcommittee discussed that issue? Is that something that
you brought before you? I can tell you a personal experience. I was deployed for 20 months after 9/11, which took me away from my teaching job at Forest Lake. I'm sitting in Camp Doha in Kuwait, and I had a guy come up, part of my section, and I could see he was kind of distraught and everything. Here he just got called up to reservists, like myself. And him and his wife are trying to figure out what they're going to sell off. Now he's at, he's a spec 4, you know, maybe making $31,000 a year, was making $90,000 to $100,000 a year in his construction company he owned. And they're trying to figure out what they're going to sell off while he's being deployed for several months. So it's a real issue. I mean, some businesses, they if you are deployed, they help your family out. They might keep other benefits going, but it is an issue for Guard and Reservists that are deployed for a period of time. And many of the Guard and Reserves have had 3, 4, 5 deployments. So and when you're deployed like that, it's you're under Title 10 orders, which is active duty orders, that is put out by the federal. It's a real issue, and it's something that we haven't really gotten into at the state level. Because of, where do we start?
But you bring up a good issue, and I think that I'll certainly be going back to our chair of the Higher Education Committee, especially for those who said they have to discontinue, they pulled out of college, and how that impacts their ability then to go back. So I'll talk to him about it and see if he's able to get some more feedback.
Madam Chair, I actually thought that they addressed that some years ago, that when they were deployed for state colleges and universities, I thought that tuition was reimbursed, but I don't know. We got to check that, because I thought that was addressed. I don't know. If it hasn't, we do need to do it. It's a good point.
And then the second issue reminded me was,
what if it happened to the beds when the Alpha Chain closed? If the state has geriatric beds that they're licensed for, why don't they use them?
Yeah, sure.
All you have to do is look into it.
Yeah, Representative Nelson.
It was sold by the state to who bought it for $1.
Huh?
You said it was sold by the state for $1.
The state sold it to Cass County for $1, 160 some acres of land, and all of the buildings. But there were still, it was a state-run geriatrics facility. and it was licensed for 405 beds. What happened to that license? Department of Human Services has to hold that license when that facility closed. And if you go to them and they're still holding it, that's one facility you can build, or two.
I'm sure, so that was not a facility that was, the oversight was not through the Department of Veterans Affairs. Am I correct? It was Beckert, it was Health and Human Services?
But if you're looking for beds to build for a new veteran's home, if they're holding them, why don't you ask for them?
What? I'll reach out to the HHS finance chair, because what we're guessing up here is that because that was not part of the veterans count of homes that they have, we have a limit of 1,058 and we're at the limit, we have a wait list. I'm guessing those beds count towards, our state has a moratorium on how many nursing home beds that we can have in the state, and that went into that problem. But I can't say for certain, so I want to check with our Department of our HHS Finance, Health and Human Services Finance Committee Chair to find out, because that goes under their purview and not the state government finance, because it wouldn't be considered a Veterans Affairs portion. But I don't know, Representative Brenner, if you want to add to that.
But another thing, when we're looking at building a new veterans home, you have to have so many miles between one home and the next. So the proximity of where it's going to be located, whether it's going to be Bemidji or whatever it's going to be, you have to have a population there, and also it could be any closer to the next one, like so many miles, whatever that formula is.
Mr. Leiter, did you have any, being a CDSO officer, do you have any feedback for us at all, or any comments you want to share?
I know one of the concerns that a lot of veterans have is when they finally decide they want to go into a veterans home, then they find out that at the shortest, up at Silver Bay, there's about a 6 to 9 month waiting list. And at times, the waiting list for a veteran at Minneapolis, where most of their families have moved through for jobs, can be 2 years. And then double that for the spouse. And when it's finally time to go in the nursing home, you really can't wait 2 years or 4 years to be able to go in together with your spouse. So that's one of the big concerns, and having more beds would alleviate that. And they probably do need to be closer to the metro area, because that's where so many of these veterans' families have moved to. Because if you put them out in Timbuktu, that makes it a long trip for a family to come visit. And then the families don't come and visit as often. So they really, as well as where the veterans are, you have to look at where the veterans' families are.
Members, any questions or comments?
Madam Chair. Okay, Madam Chair. I just wanted to go back to the veterans' choice issue. I mean, here's a program, you know, that's admittedly not working well, and yet it's what people are interested in. I don't know if there's a way that we can, you know, work with CDSOs or whatever to be the link, or to at least make sure that you know, somebody's holding somebody accountable. So it would be nice to see if we can't, you know, even if we have to temporarily sort of man it, fund it, I don't know, but I mean, there's a program that people are waiting for.
Well, I think we need to be the link to the congressional delegation to say this program that they have in place is not functional. You have a situation where they wait for 2 months to use a local facility and can't gain access to it. I think that's problematic. I'm glad to see that we have one of our congressional delegation here. And I certainly have been sharing the information too with my congressman, and I hope all of you do too, because there certainly seems to be a gap in providing quality service to the veterans. So I'm glad you shared this. And I don't know, Representative Rebecca, if you have thoughts.
Just, Madam Chair, somehow, maybe we can make sure that we don't put it into the black hole.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, so often what happens.
Yeah. Representative Johnson.
sort of thing is that feds know this is messed up. Why isn't it getting fixed? Why isn't it taking so long for our tax dollars to fix a problem they know was messed up? It's just, you know, chaps everybody's hired while our tax dollars are spent and misused, but, you know,
there's a big gap between Minnesota and D.C., yeah. That's for sure. So, Representative Johnson.
I was just going to say, I have to drive to St. Cloud twice every month for blood work. I have to drive over there for a 10-minute appointment to take blood, and then I go back 2 weeks for the results and what they want to do about it. I'd rather just walk down the street and give a little blood. I mean, they can call and say, this is what his blood says.
As far as the state goes, is there some sort of resistance to even doing this program? I mean, I know I've read, like, with the American Legion magazine, there were comments from people that they didn't even seem to want to have that outside of the VA hospital type of a... is that the case? Or?
I'm going to bite my tongue. I'll talk to you afterwards. I tell you what, I'm tired of the brick and... I go to the VA all the time, and I'm tired of the brick and mortar piece. I think we stick a lot of money into the brick and mortar, and I'm a believer that we ought to be expanding more to the type of choice program that we got, because if we could take those dollars we're sticking into brick and mortar and put it into care, I think we'd be much better off. That's just my feeling, and I use the VA in St. Cloud for all my stuff. So it's not that I don't think I'm getting decent care there, but when you get out to where you're not 10 minutes from the VA, that just doesn't work.
No.
Madam Chair, I came here because of the military retired pay tax relief. And I'm very happy to hear about that. But another concern of mine, there are veterans, too, that are on Social Security disability income. And Minnesota is a state that taxes Social Security benefits. A lot of states don't. And I know it's on a progressive thing. It's an income base, but there are a lot of states that don't tax that.
Representative
Denver, Chair, and I know that Chair Davis, the tax committee, there is a phase out of the tax on Social Security in that tax bill.
Yep, for everybody.
All Social Security or the disability, like I'm concerned about more.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. 5-year program, 20% of
it. Where they reduce it. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the issues we've been addressing at the state is homelessness among veterans and seemingly doing a reasonably good job. My question is do you feel like it's being addressed satisfactorily in this area and in these neighborhoods? Is homelessness, as far as anyone knows here, a problem among veterans?
There's at least a dozen that I know of in Pine County.
At least a dozen, you say?
At least a dozen in Pine County. They have a PTSD issue. They have a 75% check coming in. They have never been addressed to manage money. They forget to make their rent payments. They forget to pay their heat bills. They get thrown out on the street. Do they have money? Yes. But the VA stops their check when you don't have a physical address, not a post office box. Yes, there is an issue in Pine County.
And what would be your recommendation for addressing it?
It is a difficult issue to in the city. You've got homeless vets. If you put them in a house and they get their monthly check, that's one thing, but they don't know how to cook, they don't know how to take care of themselves, and they don't know how to pay their bills. They have serious traumatic injuries from combat. and that's not being addressed.
I'm wondering if Mr. Wiener, what kind of outreach does the local level do to try and get folks that are suffering from post-traumatic syndrome? Because we've talked about this at different meetings too, and it's been a mixed bag of who suffered from it and who's not, and getting them to their CDSO office.
I turned my phone off so it doesn't ring during this meeting. I am contacted sometimes 25 times a day. And I communicate with these veterans every opportunity I get.
Do you refer them? Because we do have treatment options for people that suffer. So do you give them to try and get them engaged with that? And the reason why I ask this is, at the last meeting that we were at, we had Representative Don Kriegel, who's an Iraq veteran, served actually in the legislature. And one of his comments was, the trouble is getting them to come and talk to their CBSO officer, because then they can do he called it an hour analysis that would determine whether or not they suffer from PTSD. And if they do, they have a better track record of getting them treatment and helping them out so that they can get back on their feet. And so I was just wondering if you have that, and I didn't know what Ben's experience was with that too, because it's different in every area. And so I don't know if you get a chance to talk to him or how you guys coordinate.
I talk to him daily.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, especially in this area, it's difficult because the closest beds for a homeless vet or inpatient care, everything is 70 miles away. There's MACV that does a lot of the helping veterans or homeless get on their feet. They've got beds in the Twin Cities. They've got beds in St. Cloud. They've got beds in Duluth, which are all 70 miles away. So the difficulty is there's nothing local where, you know, the only thing you can do is take these people out of the area where they do have their own support group or family or whatever, take them somewhere else. And that isn't the best solution. And we can get a lot of veterans treatment at, say, St. Cloud, at their inpatient treatment, but when they come back out, they don't necessarily have had the financial counseling and other things. And again, in a rural area that's, you know, you get one veteran this month and another veteran that month, and it's not like you've got a large enough group to address it all at once. And so you end up having a lot of our commanders of our various DAV and VFW posts try to piece things together to assist veterans, find power chairs for veterans that may need them, get ramps. So a lot of our service organizations pick up a lot of that. And then sometimes, you know, veterans just find places that they can bunk or house sit or whatever for people. And we try to do as best we can. One of the biggest problems with many of our homeless vets is they don't want to ask for help. The hardest thing is getting them to ask for the help, getting them to come into a CBSO office or to talk to somebody. Because the biggest thing, especially with PTSD, is these veterans don't want to open up to people. They don't want to talk. They want to isolate them. That's a real big problem.
Not for rust check fireplace, but I tell you what, we've got the Al Lair apartments in St. Cloud. And many folks know Al Lair and the champion he was for veterans issues. Well, the ALL apartments were designed, and the priority goes to homeless vets. Right now, it's less than 50% occupied by homeless vets. The rest of it is filled by Catholic Charities with other needy people. Right behind that, in fact, even with my weak, bad arm and old age, I think I can hit where they broke ground at the VA just across the fence. They just broke ground for another homeless VA shelter. And I'm scratching my head, why? You've got a facility there that took less than 50% being utilized for the veterans it was designed for, and now you're broke ground on a federal facility. Less, you can throw a baseball and hit it, most people could. And where are they going to get these people from? They're not, like you said, the people from Pine County don't want to go there. It's 70 miles away. But
We don't have them in St. Cloud, they fill up the Whale Letterhouse. So I sometimes wonder exactly if the left hand knows what the right hand is doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Detmer, and Veterans Services, but it does seem to be we need to focus a little bit more on treatment and services of some of these rural areas for our veterans. And hopefully, we can take a more acute look at that, because I heard this from other rural areas as well. There are folks that need that extra connection and just putting off the others and such.
MACD, somebody mentioned MACD, they do an excellent job at homeless veterans, but maybe it's something that they should be looking into, maybe looking at more facilities around the state for the homeless veterans. I know the Commander's Task Force, which is made up of all the different veterans organizations that Commissioner Shelton oversees. This should maybe be a priority. If it's going to be a priority, it has to be brought to the legislature that this is a priority. And then say MACD would like to be the people that provide some other facilities. It would have to be put together as a request for funding and so forth. So that would be the process that I would recommend.
Madam Chair, I can give you a slight solution. Sandstone is building a new hospital. What do they have? They have an old hospital and a nursing home that they're not going to use. Now, Madam Chair, that's 80 beds. And it's not in the city, it's not, it's right here in this county. Within 2 years, in a facility that currently meets all state and federal regulations. Just to think about it.
Ben, can you clear up the number for me? And I know you've mentioned this at a county board meeting, that Pine County has one of the largest populations in the United States of veterans per capita.
We have just under 30,000, Madam Chair, we have just under 30,000 residents of Pine County. And we have right around 3,000 veterans in Pine County, so roughly 10%, which is well above the state average and well above the national average. That carries pretty much in most rural areas, though. They're all most rural areas tend to be above the national and state averages.
Kudos to a patriotic.
I think the gentleman hit one of the nails on the head when he said he allowed himself. I mean, with years, I don't know what it's like now, but when I went down there, it was more adversarial than supportive. It was almost like they wanted to know, what do you want, not what can we do? And I won't go down there anymore. I'll handle it myself, and I'll eat them.
You know, I saw something from my experience in the military. When they're doing all this BRAC base closures, you see a lot of bases, you know, Minnesota doesn't deal with active duty bases, obviously, but you'd see bases that were huge, and they would have half the base be shut down for whatever reason. And with all this PSTD stuff going on that seems to need a different level of care that's been seen, it almost makes you wonder if they couldn't do some sort of a facility on these active duty bases for more of a slower return to civilian life or something, you know. I mean, those bases, they have everything too. They have hospitals, they have, I mean, they're a whole city within the fence there, you know. I wonder if that'd be something the federal would deal with or be concerned with. Yeah, it seems like there's a level between active duty and civilian that seems to be an issue more now than maybe ever before.
Right. Any other thoughts at all?
I have
question. Looking at these papers, I'm seeing money. I don't see people. How come you don't put the people out here? How many people are you serving on with these, each of these things? And to start off with, just to say how many veterans are in the state of Minnesota, and then how many are exercising using these. And the other part of that is our World War II, and now we're getting into our Korean veterans, they're dying off at a substantial rate. So when you go to people, your fellow members, and you say, we need this because we got X number of people, well, that number's dropping off. So it's harder for you to sell because you're putting more money in less people. So have fun.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the whole people component of it, because at our last hearing that we had, this was in the Coon Rapids area, and we kind of stumbled across this in the feedback that we got from folks. What we are finding is for the CDSO officer, at least for that area, there isn't always good communication from the federal government when active duties, they come back home. And so there's a big communication gap, and that causes problems for addressing the issue of post-traumatic syndrome, from addressing the issues of finances, and everything else that comes with having been away from home for a long time and coming back. And I even asked, you know, are the numbers accurate? And they said, we cannot rely on these numbers, because some of the problems, you know, Ben even mentioned this, Mr. Johnson from the VA. When he went out on deployment, he listed his parents' address because at that time, that's all he really had. But when he came home, he wasn't going back to his mom and dad. And so there's a huge problem. You know, for me, I would think that as soon as they come back onto American soil or wherever they've been come back here, Minnesota, first question you should say, this is your CDSO officer. Here's what they can offer you. And we want you to start all your communication with that person. Because they're the experts, they're the ones that can help navigate not only through the state side of things, but also through the federal side of things. And to me, that doesn't seem like rocket science to do something like that. But when I mentioned that, then they seemed to think that was kind of it was a foreign concept. So I mean, that's one of my big beliefs that I am going to be taking up with my Representative Detmer being the champion on these issues. But just that doesn't seem to be like a hard fix to make that I think would make a world of difference in the lives of these returning soldiers. So, but I hear where you're coming from. So.
I agree with you that the numbers are, we're losing our World War II and Korean War vets at a rapid rate. And we, in the last 10 years, have increased the number of veterans in this state by a multiplier, I can't tell you, because I know I know 250 young men and women to Iraq that were 20 years old, that are now 30 years old. We multiplied the number of veterans when they started deploying Guard and Reserve units out of this state, and we've deployed more Guard and Reserve units out of this state than any other state, I think, in the country, because just because of our work ethic, we win a lot. Right now, we're probably still dropping off a little bit now because of the downsizing, but some of those folks, if we could make this a veteran-friendly state, because when you get out of the active component, they hand you a list of veteran-friendly states. Minnesota's not on it. So if we can kind of get this income tax and do a few other things, we might be able to pull some of those numbers back into this state. But you are correct. We're losing the one end. But we, in the last 10 years, gained quite a few in the last 10 years. So I don't know what those numbers are. I don't have that in front of me. I know
369,000 is what we have there.
You know, and I think that increased quite a bit from 10 years ago. Just not to dispute the fact that we are losing those champions of our country at a rapid rate right now. So.
Madam Chair and maybe Representative House, since you're familiar with St. Cloud, we had a situation several years ago with the VA medical centers falsifying records on wait times and services. Could you give us an update on that on a statewide basis? Has that situation been fixed?
Well, I think they'd like to say that they've addressed some of that. I will tell you that I firmly believe that there's still a lot of that going on. I know from my account at my doc at the VA, she was let go, and yet I was seeing on Facebook that some soldiers were still being assigned to her as appointments. So to say that that's totally cleared up, and maybe that was a mistake. I'm here to say I don't think that's all gone yet. So I think that some of that still exists. I don't think we're out of the woods there.
Any other thoughts? Members, any questions?
Actually, this is great. We've had some good questions. And we also have I co-chair the MAD Military Action Group. It's a think tank for military issues, and we meet like once a month. And in fact, our next meeting is next Monday at the State Office Building, and I go to room 400. And it's open to anybody to come in. We don't vote on anything. If anybody wants to come in with issues, a lot of our legislation comes out of that group. And we have the Commissioner's Office is there. This Department of Those Affairs, Military Affairs is there, DEED is there, Minsky was there, University System, all the different veteran groups of the Managed Task Force, they're there, and we just discuss military issues. And sometimes we put together some legislation to try to get it through, and a lot of the legislation that we put through in the last few years comes out of that MAD group. So if you have issues, you can call my office. My LA is Sam, and get on the agenda. If you have something you'd like to share, just get on the agenda. We have something that's coming to Minnesota October 4th through the 8th. The Twin Cities is sponsoring and hosting the Medal of Honor Convention. We expect there's 70-plus Medal of Honor winners that are alive in America, and we expect about 50 of them to come to Minnesota for their convention. That's going to take place October 4th through the 8th. So it's quite a event.
And all the comments that you've made today, staff has been keeping track of those for us. And then what we do is we go back into the because we don't have the answers always on the spot. And so we need to sometimes track down our federal delegations and find answers to some of these, and then also talk to our state